All righty, it is the fifth day of August, 2025, 10 a.m. This is a meeting of the work session for the Uintah County Commission. Our first, oh, we're being held in the large conference room at the Commission Chambers in Vernal. Our first item today is the Commission Meeting Agenda Policy.
Okay, Commissioners, just wanted to keep this alive and keep moving. We're still waiting to hear back from Civic Plus from the computer department. But there's more drafts there you can look at. And at this point, that's about all I've got to report. I haven't heard back from Ryan yet on what the status. He was waiting to hear back from Civic Plus.
When did you request that from IT?
Just yesterday.
It sounds like OnBase is phasing out.
Yeah, that's the impression I got, is OnBase is kind of phasing out their agenda portion of it. That's why Wasatch County had gone to Civic Plus. He was in communication with Civic Plus, but I have not heard back, you know, anything from him. And that was just yesterday afternoon when I reached out to him.
Ryan reached out to Civic Plus over a week ago. He emailed me last night. He hasn't heard anything back, so we're still tweaking the language on the checklist and the policy a little bit, and we're waiting for that, so we've been progressing.
Does everyone understand why we're doing it, what we want with this policy? We just want to standardize mainly commission meetings and that, so that we're more prepared. We have documents beforehand, so Mike's office isn't rushed last minute. We have the agendas ready and prepared, so that's just a way to help get that.
I have thought of that. All the proper departments.
I have been asking for that because, yes, we've had that issue many, many times where things become emergencies.
Right.
And I think we can do better. Thank you.
I think so, too.
Anything else on that?
I didn't have anything else.
Thank you. Amendment policy 700, employee travel, somebody.
Okay. Unless you want me.
Yeah, okay. Great.
So the county attorney's office has been working with HR and also with the purchasing department with a travel policy. We have a travel policy currently, but we are going to kind of standardize that, update that. And I do have, we have a working document. We're going to send that out to everybody today. Please pay attention to it because it's going to change some things that we do. And Melissa and Jenny, please feel free to jump in anytime. There's going to be, for overnight traveling, we're going to have to get pre-approval from department heads. Certain things will be paid for, certain things will not. One of the major changes is that before we are used to receiving a per diem check before we go, we're doing away with that. Now you just have to use your county card or be reimbursed after. There are certain prohibitions when you can use your P card. Lodging, we're going to use the GSA rates and up to 20% more. If it's more than that, you're going to have to get pre-approval. And sometimes that will come in, like when we have conferences in a particular hotel, and maybe those rooms are going to be a little bit more than, you know, the cheap hotels. So we'll stay at that hotel, but we're trying to do away with unnecessarily staying at some expensive places and bring that more into line with what the state requires. There'll be calculations for travel, you know, mileage reimbursement, things like that.
Did you talk about how much we reimburse?
Turn your mic on, please.
Yes, we will discuss that.
Okay. I just know that that had come up as well. If we were going to look at changing the reimbursement for when there is a county vehicle available, but they want to take their own personal, or vice versa, if there's not a county vehicle available and they take their personal.
Yeah, the draft language actually specifies that if there is not a county vehicle available, then that needs to be a written request, in which case they would get mileage reimbursement. But there would have to be documentation that there was not one available. Otherwise, you can obviously take your car if you prefer, you know, whatever. There just won't be reimbursement for that mileage if there's a county vehicle available.
Zero reimbursement on that?
Zero. Is how it's drafted and written. I'm not saying I suggest that.
The current policy says you get half. Right? You get one way.
Yeah. And I've read other county policies that, like, 70%. Like, I think it's a matter of what we want to do, right? Like, I'm not sure there's a steadfast rule.
So we'll send it out, so please comment and say.
And the other comment I'd make there also is not every employee that travels has a P card.
Right, right.
So.
Well, and that's something I think we're looking into as well, because it seems like almost everybody has a P card now, though. A lot of them do. So we're looking at a policy or something to help make sure those are monitored, because things I've noticed in the check run, the warrants, is we get an Amazon, and we've got it coded to the right department and what line item, but then it just tells you what that line item is, and I'm like, I have no idea what that was, and it's $500. It's to Amazon, that's all I know, and it's building and supplies or office supplies. I would like to change that column to description and have it actually be a description of what that is. Is that paper, you know, a pallet of paper? Is that, it doesn't have to be super specific, but I think we need to have some description of what that was, because that's, we're approving that with not knowing anything other than it's an Amazon charge for building and supplies or
that the department has approved in their budget.
Right, but the department, if they're the ones inputting that, can they be the ones that put in the description so that it's not put on the clerk auditor's office to have to put the description in? Wouldn't they be, and then they submit their receipt with it, right?
But they have to have that
charge. Yeah. If it's a P card charge, they're having to submit a receipt.
Oh, yeah, everything's, yeah, every receipt.
And having to search the Bible when we're trying to find those,
yeah, I get that.
It would be nice if there's a program that does that and helps with that stuff.
We are working on, we're talking about credit card. I'm sorry, I was late. I was finishing my talk. We're working on a system where we get that information directly from the credit card system and incorporate it into our environment so that we have better tracking of that, because credit card expenditures are really one of those, like, I don't mean to be rude or anything, but it is a black hole of where the money goes, because there's not a lot of accountability with that, because everybody just uses that P card and it's a done deal. So we're looking at doing, and we talked to Margie about this and Mike briefly about it, and Ryan and I were involved in this, trying to figure out how to, there's a way that we can take that credit card data directly from the credit card company, and then you'll get more information, just like on your own statement when you have, you know, the numbers and that detailed information when you do that, that we can pull that in and figure out a way to put it in our system so it's more accessible to us. Correct, Ryan? You want to jump in on this a little bit?
Yeah. As far as I know, we can get an export direct from U.S. Bank, and then we can tie card numbers to the department.
Yeah.
It's definitely the first step. There are definitely products out there that we can do that would make, you know, submitting P-card statements different and everything along those lines. There are definitely products out there that do all of those things. Right now, this is a very minimal cost to the county to do it the way that we're considering it. So.
Is there, I know when I go out with other counties and sheriffs and vendors and whatnot, nobody brings home a physical receipt anymore. Everybody takes a photo of it, sends it to wherever that needs to land, and you never think about it again. And they talk about very rarely having a lost receipt. I don't know if we can get to that point. That would be
digital receipt would be awesome.
We can get
of what? Digital?
Yeah.
You just take a picture of your receipt,
yeah,
and then send it to wherever it needs, you know, whatever program we have.
Or so a lot of times hotels email them to you. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I mean, that's ideal if you can email, because then you can attach it to your, you know, to your record. I mean, and if you have a photo of it, you can attach it to. I mean, email it's a little cumbersome. You can email it to yourself and then attach it to your PO or whatever else. We need it. You know, we need it bundled with our system somehow. right? That's the ultimate goal here. So if you take a picture of it on your phone, then you can email it to yourself and attach it to, or put it in Google Drive or whatever and attach it to that document so that it is in our consolidated little bucket so that we have that record for the audience.
Yeah, and having them together, like departments,
exactly.
All the departments are
right.
Together with everything there.
Yeah.
Because I have spent countless hours trying to track down
and that's
a charge and where it went and who it was for and in this
right.
50-page, 60-page.
Part of why we wanted to do the export from the credit card to our system. But again, let me just refresh something. We are working on moving from the old Oracle forms to Oracle Apex. The goal is the end of this year. No new programming can happen until we get from old to current. So we can certainly do this, but I want to create a reasonable expectation that it's not going to happen until next year. Because we have, you know, we came into this and we have Oracle forms and we're still trying to get out of, we've been 2 years trying to get out of Oracle forms. There were hundreds of them. So until next year, we want to do this, absolutely, this makes sense. We want to join the 21st century in all of our applications. But we still got to get out of the 19th century where we're at right now until we can do that. So yes, we can do this. But in the meantime, I would say take that photo, attach it to the PO or whatever you're doing, so that we have that digital record with our stuff where we need it. Because ultimately, we're going to need it together for the audience, as I've said before.
So as far as POs go, though, I want to just jump in really fast. We want to separate employee travel from the procurement process. We want procurement to focus on vendors and the procurement office not vetting employee travel. So my office does not want to approve, like, get involved in that travel. So we will monitor travel as far as paying vendors for events, things like that, and we're working on a supplemental policy. But as far as, like, procurement code, like, our purposes are to ensure the money is unspent with unencumbered, right, so we can promise the vendors promise to pay, and that it's a competitive and transparent process. For employees, we want to separate that, treat it under the employee policy, so we want to exempt from procurement. So that wouldn't be reviewed by the purchasing department at all. So there would be no PO for that. Commission will be reviewing travel over certain thresholds. So department heads will have the authority to approve travel within their offices to an extent, but when we get to the exceptions, it'll be commission. It won't be purchasing. So that's going to be separated.
And just so everybody knows, purchasing is mentioned here in this policy, but yes, we're coming up with that separate purchasing policy, and this is just in line with if there's those departments who arrange travel for non-employees, which is really travel and tourism and maybe the attorney's office. I don't know if there's any other offices that do that.
Western Park, Merchant Canal, a few of them.
And that's not everyone, not all the time, but that is a special exception that we need to really be careful about. And that is mentioned here in this, but most departments won't have to deal with that.
So we're good taking a photo of a receipt and then just having that print the copy of, okay.
Because that would be with paper, because typically it's a tax receipt, so you don't need a physical.
Because it's all turned in by paper.
Well, it's because she scans it. That's what we're saying.
So
we want to avoid those steps and just get them digital in.
Right.
Well, eventually it will.
Yeah.
But right now it's all paper right now. You've got to turn in.
Another thing for my office is the majority of my guys don't have a P card, and I wouldn't suggest giving everybody a P card, especially for the jail. It's so cumbersome, so that we're going to. And they don't have the money to up front for hotels and food for a week.
So we want to send it to that.
That's one of the things I think we'll need to kind of discuss. So
it's going to make me so unpopular.
Okay. So the FLSA has guidelines for hourly employees who are traveling concerning meal per diems, right? So there's wage and hour law that says if an hourly employee gets a meal per diem, but it's not the actual cost of the meal, so you give me $70 to travel today for my meal per diems, I buy one double cheeseburger for $2, I pocket the rest of the month, right? That's fine, but then they say that you have to take the windfall, add it to the base hourly rate of pay for the purposes of overtime calculation. So it's kind of like this administrative horror story in payroll.
So either we need to figure work with payroll so that we can do those calculations if it's, we're passionate about doing a prepaid meal per diem that is not for actual cost, or meals need to be at actual cost.
Because I'm looking at the same hamburger you're talking about. You go to McDonald's, you can go to McDonald's and get the whatever menu they have, because I don't eat McDonald's, nasty. But you go anywhere to get a hamburger anywhere, it's $15-$20 now. I mean, so.
But we go by GSA rates also.
Mm-hmm. Well, all of that is fine. It's just if it's not for the actual cost on an hourly employee, the windfall has to be calculated into their base wage and for overtime calculation. So no salary-exempt employees with that effect. So you can break it out and do salary-exempt get a per diem and other ones don't. But generally the rule should be, especially with hourly associates, is that you get paid for the cost of your meal up to the per diem amount that is set in the GSA.
Wow. That's extremely difficult, especially because the point is, you know, you may, that's not fair to the employee either, because if you think about somebody that goes up and they skip breakfast and lunch so they can go get a decent dinner, and they pay more for that decent dinner, that per diem should apply for the day.
It does still apply for the day.
Okay.
So if it's $70 or wherever you're going, let's say it's $70 breakfast, lunch, dinner is the GSA rate. Okay. It's still $70, okay, no matter how you spend it. But if you only spend $68, then you just get $68 reimbursed.
So what you're saying is hourly employees need to turn in receipts for meals to prove that they pay equal to or greater than the per diem amount. Is that
correct? And technically it should be a reimbursement, which I know is tricky if they don't. If you use your P card, then it doesn't matter, right? Because you're paying the actual cost of the meal. But for an hourly employee who's traveling without a P card, it's tricky to do that. Yeah.
That's beyond tricky. That's
and
really
another thing we've talked about as well is having a card in certain departments where they could assign that card out to different people at different times. So they have a sign out. Okay, so-and-so took the P card. They can take it for training for the week, use it, and then it comes back.
We have been known to use ours that way.
Right.
So then if they're using, even if, okay, let's, I don't have a lot of hourly employees, but still want to make sure I understand this. So if I have an hourly employee and I send them off, here's your P card, go get your meals.
Mm-hmm.
If they exceed the amount, are they in trouble for that, or is that?
Well, that would be a clerk auditor issue, whether you require repayment for over the per diem or not.
Okay.
That's outside of like employee on the employment side.
I think you would have to reimburse them.
I mean, I would think that would be the policy, but
I mean, I think that just makes it so complicated because, like, let's say that an hourly employee goes to Vegas. They're in the conference center.
Mm-hmm.
If they need to go get a meal at lunchtime, they have to travel an hour outside of the strip, get a meal, and then go back to the conference. The amount of cost of accounting for them to travel outside of that area to go get a meal at the per diem rate is more expensive than if they just got the meal at the conference.
Yeah, and that's a whole separate issue.
No, I don't think it is, though, because, like, the employee doesn't want to have to pay for the extra amount outside of the per diem.
Well, they,
but as
that's probably happening now already, right? Like, if your per diem is $70 and you pay $100, do you not make...
We're only paying... We do not pay above the GSA limits.
Yeah, so if there was a P card charge for over the per diem amount, what would happen? That's what you're describing, is if you can't get a meal for what your per diem rate is.
Most people do not use a P card for meals.
Right.
So right now, my guys go to
in Vegas and they get $120 for meals for the week. They're spending another $150 out of their own pocket, guaranteed. Because like what Ryan's saying, you go to try and get the breakfast before the conference, and it's going to be $20, $30. And then you go to lunch, and it's $40 for the buffet that's right there next to the conference. And then you go to dinner, it's another $50 for dinner that night. So they're spending the money out of their own pocket. If we're asking them to pay back money or try to, like Ryan's saying, leave the area to go to In-N-Out Burger and get something cheaper, then you don't come back.
I am hearing this, and but that's not what I was
talking about. I'm going to beg to differ with you there, Melissa. as long as you're paying at GSA or below, it's not taxable income to us.
I'm not saying it's taxable. I'm saying that the windfall counts as income under the FLSA guidelines.
If you're paying the GSA limit, then there's no windfall because they're going to spend whatever. So, so that's something I think we need to have more research on.
Sure.
That, because if we give them a $60 GSA limit for that area that day, they may spend $70, they may spend $30. As long as we're not paying above the GSA limit, it's not taxable income.
Okay.
So I think that's something me and you and Lauren
sure.
need to have further discussion on.
Yeah.
If we're paying, if the GSA says it's 60 and we're paying them 100, then we have an issue. But we're not, none of ours is above the GSA limits.
Right.
So it's not tax. I'm going to argue it's not taxable.
I'm not saying that it's because of the tax rate. I'm saying because that's income earned under the FLSA guideline, and therefore they should get that windfall added to their hourly base pay for their calculation.
And
of
that's where we're going to beg to differ. We need to do more research
that's
on that.
Fair.
Because
that's
that one there is if you're paying a reimbursement for travel for an out-of-state conference or out-of-town conference, you're not. We're not paying above the GS. It's not taxable income.
So, but before, when you could get a check before,
before you went,
and then you didn't use all that for the food, you would come back with $100 or something sometimes, right?
Let's say you never received higher than the GSA limit.
Exactly. Well, right. So that's what Melissa is also getting into. That. So you know, if I had a conference for 3 days. And I didn't spend, and then I got a check from Margie beforehand, and I didn't spend all that money. I've made money on that. So that's the money that would be.
But you did not receive more than the GSA limit.
No.
So therefore, it's not taxable income.
So we'll
because
get together.
That's why I think we need a further discussion. Because you chose, me or whoever chose, I'm going to go on a fast this whole time and not eat.
Right.
That's our choice. Because the only other option you would have is an accountable plan. You bring all your receipts back and reimburse you for it.
And that's what we're trying to do.
That's not a good way to do it.
And that's not a good way to do it.
That's a disaster.
That's going to be
because then you're going
to
see them.
They're
going to turn in that $20 breakfast. They're going to turn in that $40 lunch. They're going to turn in that $50 dinner.
And yeah, listen, I'm just trying to explain what the law says, and so if we don't want to do it that way, that's absolutely your choice and your choice to do it how you please. That's just
so
what the law says.
Further discussion.
If we don't want to do it that way, it's fine.
Okay, we're done with this one.
So we will send it out.
You three get together and figure it out. Get with the tax people, whoever you need to, figure it out.
So we will send this policy out so that people can comment on it.
Mr. Speaker, may I ask one question?
Hang
on just a minute.
Ken, the other thing we need to also be aware of is if your training is providing you, that has to be factored in. If it's training, it's providing meals, you should not be receiving per diem or anything for that. And unless there is a specific exemption due to health, dietary things, whatever, then that needs to be approved by your supervisor or whoever's above that person.
So right now they have to provide proof of the training they're going to and the conference, and it is deducted. They don't get breakfast because it's at the motel or lunch is provided at the training, so we're only getting this. It's all broke down now.
Right.
So we're doing that now.
That wasn't happening.
Commissioner Fieber, kind of the vehicle thing, you know, some scenarios, and the same person Steve's talking about, don't have the money to do, they don't have, there's not a fleet vehicle, their car isn't adequate that I would want to be sending them to over the mountain in a storm, or they have a sporty little race car that we don't want to send them over the, do we rent a car, how do we handle that. You know, there's.
I don't know if we've ever had that problem.
Have we had that before?
Okay. No.
Yeah. No vehicle.
We've never had that problem. We do need to find a vehicle.
Yeah, usually I think we've always thought if that came up, we could look to other departments to see if they have a vehicle available that they could use.
Okay, to my point, then why don't we do that anyway?
What do you mean? We do that if we need to. If the employee's willing to do that, but if the employee wants to take their own vehicle because there's not a fleet vehicle, I don't know. That's something we could look at.
I think the issue with that right now is that the policy says that they'll be reimbursed half of the mileage. So that's what they're that's what some people are choosing to do is get reimbursed half the mileage instead of using the county vehicle. So they're making that choice.
But that's even if there is a fleet vehicle available.
Right now.
Yeah.
So in the future.
So it's because of the policy that
it's it doesn't read that way. So.
You're just wanting it to say what then?
Well, if you have just you have four vehicles, you take that choice away that we're not going to reimburse you half, and you have four people that are driving a fleet vehicle and six that aren't. And you take that away, and so now they don't have the choice. You now need 10 fleet vehicles to cover the same amount of travel. Because I'm not going to drive, why would I drive my own at my own expense? And I think there's probably lots of days where there's four vehicles out here and there's, like I'm saying, 10 people on the road. Six of them are getting reimbursed half. You take half reimbursement away, now you have the need for 10 fleet vehicles.
Well, currently, though, it says if you don't have a fleet vehicle, you're reimbursed half.
But in the future, she's saying
the whole future, the whole...
No, if you don't have a fleet vehicle.
You get reimbursed full, but if there's one available, you get half.
Correct.
So you're saying, what are you saying, though? Give them full reimbursement?
No, what I'm saying is if we have four fleet vehicles... And there's, I keep trying to get rid of it. And there's 10 people on the road, and you don't have a problem with fleet vehicles because you're reimbursing them half, and they're electing to drive their own vehicle. Now you take that away. There's not enough fleet vehicles.
I'm really confused. It
makes sense because if you have people using their own vehicles, you still have those four vehicles that can be used. But by using those, if you take that half reimbursement away, you've got six people wanting those vehicles, and there's not going to be enough vehicles at that point.
So what's wrong with the way we're doing it?
So I don't see a problem with
the way we're
paying
doing
half.
There's not a problem. I mean, we can just add that language back in. There's no problem with that.
Thank you.
Of course.
It used to be reimbursed 100% no matter what you were using, whether there was one or not. And they moved it to half.
It's
back
right.
In gas for 4 or 5 years.
Which makes sense because we have county vehicles, so it's for county business. So.
Well, but if you decided to use your own vehicle, even if there was a county one available, you still got reimbursed full.
Yeah,
full
that's the other
issue. I'm sorry, they've been changing it over.
Oh, definitely, John.
Consideration of county sole signatory authority policy. Lauren.
Okay, so the next one, unfortunately, we've had some contracts come through that were signed by county employees, did not go through our office. We're trying to change that. This is a policy that will ensure that only individuals with the appropriate approval and accountability can sign. It assigns the signing authority to the commission who can give it to, assign other people to sign them, but you just can't sign a contract and not put it through a commission meeting and not let the attorneys know. And it doesn't happen all that time, all that often, but we just want to have there's one way to do that. If we're going to have county, if you're going to sign a contract for the county, make sure it goes through the commission and that they give you authority to sign that or they sign that. Once again, this is a work in progress. We'll send this out. Look at this, and I know, like, the sheriff, you get a lot of contracts for you to sign, so we need to make sure that you sign those, but of course you bring them to the commission so that they know. But we just need to make sure that there's a policy or there's a process that's followed that's legal.
Well, what we have in there currently is either it goes through commission meeting and the commission gives approval for Steve to sign the contract, or it has to be in writing.
There's a written
permission. So it's very clear that yes, commission approved, they can sign.
We're the only ones that can indent the county.
What's that?
So the county commissioners, only people that could exempt the county.
And we want to be careful because under certain circumstances, if you sign for the county and something happens, you can personally be held liable.
Exactly.
So we want to get protected employees.
We are working on getting a master contract document spreadsheet or list available so that we're working with Karina and the commission to see if we can get all contracts that are signed at the county level in a list so that we can send out emails 2 months before that contract needs to be signed again so that we can keep on top of this and see that the attorneys can have time to review those contracts and if it affects IT so that IT can have time to review those contracts as well because, you know, just because we signed an AI contract last year doesn't mean that the AI rules haven't changed this year and we may need to have something added to that. Same thing applies to legal. So moving forward, we need to get all contracts in a list. And like I said, Karina and the IT department have been working on getting a consolidated list, and we have a list that we're working with. So if you have a contract that you're aware of, please make sure we know about it so we can get it in there.
And it needs to go to the clerk's office is going to have the majority of them, but we ran into the problem, and that's why we have the commission agenda, the policy, that there's a lot of contracts that go. They go through commission meeting and then they never make it to the clerk's office because the clerk's office is the record keeper. But yes,
so
it would be good to have a list.
We really need a master list that triggers all these departments to have access to this contract 2 months prior to the renewal of each of these contracts. So that's what we're working on. And anything you can do to provide us with that information to help us, we are most appreciative.
I have another question with that. I was going to ask it previously and I forgot. When you say we get on Apex all over to Oracle Apex, will then we be able to do as many forms as possible digital, including filling them out online and signatures online and paying online?
Once we get into Oracle Apex, we can do many, many things. You've seen what Oracle, most of you have seen the change from forms to Apex, and you can see how clean it looks, how easy it looks, and how much more user-friendly it is. Once we get there, we can add those items onto a list and get them on our calendar. Now, we're not going to be able to do 50 forms in January, granted. I mean, it takes some time, and there's other things on the IT's plate as well. But, yes, we can absolutely look at, and that's what the IT, when we plug the IT steering committee again, if you've got something that affects that you need IT's weigh in on, please go to the steering committee. Please let us know ahead of time prior to, when you need to go live with something. Preferably a couple months again, as much notice as we can get. It's really helpful because our plate gets really full at certain times of the year with what's going on with what we need to do for the county as other departments. So please let us know. We're here to serve. We really are. But we need to be able to have time to do that. Does that answer your question, Sonia?
Anything else?
Matt, did you have a comment?
Yeah. Is the policy going to define what a contract is?
Yes, I believe it does. And also, with those who have templates, if you change even one word in that template, it has to come back. You can't change anything. We've had a problem with people changing languages, with language in that, and we haven't seen that. The commission hasn't seen it. So that's a totally different contract than what was approved. So, yeah, that will also be included.
So and once
it's approved 6 years ago doesn't mean it's still good today.
We've had that happen
as well. They're like, well, it was approved 6 years ago. Well, I know, but a lot of things have changed
dated,
6 years.
But if it hasn't been brought and you're still using it, I mean, if you haven't changed it, use it. But bring it to us. But I think it would still be good. I mean, that's what we'd be using.
Unless it's dated.
We'd have to look at it.
It really should come through you
absolutely
every time. That's the rule. Because then if it's one that you've already approved and they didn't change anything, done. Here you go. It goes forward. But at least it's been through your eyes and approved.
That's what happens.
That way it's always the attorney's fault.
Yeah.
It's almost. Okay, same way
we'll send it out to
Peels.
Okay, commissioners, just for an FYI, and I've sent two of them to you. We need to do a resolution on next week's meeting. I believe it's a resolution authorizing cross appeal on Mid-America Pipeline and Ramsey Hill. Those were filed in my office and with State Tax Commission according to code. There are two other appeals that have been filed with the County Assessor's Office. code says they have to be filed with the county auditor's office, and these are centrally assessed appeals. Monday was the deadline on those. Also, I had sent them to Tom Peters, but after discussion with Brandy, with UAC and that, they're doing them, so I'm going to forward them to UAC.
Yes, they
are. Are we going to make sure that UAC actually gets these cross appeals done in the time frame that is required?
So that we don't. We will still be involved.
Right, we need to be involved, but the cross appeal has to be filed within a certain number of days.
I haven't. Sign an agreement with UAC?
Yep. We did pay them.
What they'll do, we need to look at that and see.
I think so.
All we have is a letter from them stating they're going to provide services for that. I don't know.
I don't know how specific it was.
How specific it is. I did speak with Brandy Grace yesterday, and she said forwarding them to her, and then she would take it from there. That's all I know. So I just want to make sure that everybody, that we get something on Ramsey Hill and Mid-America for next week's agenda to approve those cross appeals. And legal, I'll let you decide on the other two that was not sent to the proper office.
Forward them also to
I will
UAC.
Forward them also to UAC.
With the understanding they came from the assessor.
And I've made that comment
unless
on
them. Unless Danette wants to handle them herself.
She's got it. She's all over it. So anyway, that's the update on that one. And like I say, Monday was the last day to file. Mid-America, Ramsey Hill's the only two that filed properly, and there's two others that did not file properly.
So does UAC have a specific person like Tom Peters?
They do not have a specific person. They brought this before the UAC board, and we voted and approved it. All counties were supposed to be contributing to this fund depending on their centrally assessed levels. I believe Millard backed out and is not part of the process. I believe they're the only one I'm aware of that is not participating. And everyone will participate. Their UAC wants to utilize different attorneys. Like Tom Peters is one of them. But they will also utilize, Salt Lake County is not contributing because we will be using their attorneys, centrally assessed attorneys as well, to help with the process. So it's kind of a joint combined effort.
I think Eric's kind of spearheaded.
I don't really spearhead in it. It was brought by Brandy before.
Yeah, I think he's more kind of spearheaded.
I didn't see that.
Anything else?
We got it.
Okay.
Okay,
Monday we got a new girl. Be gentle with her.
What's her name? Yeah, there will be a new Heather Benson.
Barnes.
Heather Barnes will be our new.
Nicole's in transportation. Feel free to stop by and give her a hard time.
She's the new manager of the transportation district.
Okay.
And
what? You got something to say?
Bridget?
So I don't miss Bill Fever, does.
I already said it.
I know.
Said it.